And that's not all. Buy today and we'll send you completely free.
Ever thought that some offers are just too good to be true?
Yes, that's an incredible 42-piece set for only $19.95. Yes, you heard us.
That you don't generally get something for nothing?
Free! Free! Free!
Well, at PokerStars, you actually do. Because the minute you sign up as a real money player, you automatically join our VIP club and start earning player points towards hundreds of items, from plasmas to Porsches to seats at major poker tournaments. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to see why our rewards program makes other offers seem, well, a lot of hot air. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's October 22nd, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, you know the term all things are relative?
All things are relative, yes. I think that was coined by Albert Einstein.
Well, apparently... If you live in Mississippi,
I'm sure it's not. But I was going to wait for you to tell me I was full of it. But no, go ahead with your story.
He did come up with it.
Historical accuracy has never been a hallmark of this show. Go ahead.
Neither has research. So we, you know, if you live in Mississippi and you're 40 years old, you're considered a senior.
That's correct.
But if you live in Florida, where God's Waiting Room is its nickname, and you're 40, you're considered a young gun.
Really?
Yes, if you want to play in the International Series Young Guns Tournament at Daytona Beach, you can play if you're 40 years or younger.
Wow. So you could actually play... in the same month, these are both in November.
Yes.
You could play a Young Guns tournament and a Seniors tournament if you were exactly 40 years old.
Exactly 40 years old. I can play in both. I think that would probably have to require the Guinness folks to show up to each of these events to verify that, yes, I have indeed spanned a generation in a matter of 3.5 days, I think, is the difference between the two tournaments.
That's great. You should be like, you know, Phil Collins during Live Aid.
Oh, remember that? When he flew over the lake? That was awesome.
You should fly. You should go to Daytona, be a young gun, you know, wear your sunglasses and your, Abercrombie and Fitch outfit. Yeah. And then and win that. Take that tournament down. Take that bad boy down and get on a plane, fly to Memphis and go down to the Magnolia and, you know, go in there with your walker and your rascal and take that bad boy down.
My belt up to my nipples. You know, pants pulled up that high. You know, that's the dream for me is to have that outfit ready to go. So really, I mean, how can it be? How can I be a young gun in one place and a senior citizen in another?
Wow. You know, had we discovered that earlier, that would have been a good contest for us to run to see if we can get somebody to actually win both of them.
Oh, man. That's just hilarious to me. I just can't believe it. But anyway, I had to bring that up because you busted my chops couple of weeks ago about being a senior. Well, now I'm here to tell you that I still get carded at the Daytona Beach Kennel Club.
You young gun, you.
Unbelievable.
Well, you know, hey, Chris, I've been on the road a lot, as you know. Yep. And all I got to say from this last trip, which was a combination personal business trip, was thank Darwin for poker on TV. Now, I know this is a huge statement for me because the listeners know I'm not a big fan of watching poker on TV, kind of giving it up. So I don't want anybody to think I'm going crazy here. I'm not going to, you know, fire up the season pass on the TiVo again. But, wow, I have never appreciated the fact that we had poker on TV more than this last trip. You know, you've traveled with me a lot. You know, at the end of the day, when my head hits the pillow, I am in full-on REM, like, within 5 seconds, right?
Right, absolutely.
I do not struggle to fall asleep ever.
Nope.
But, you know, I was down at the Florida Gaming Summit. It was a long day. Finished up with some meetings, got back to the hotel room around 10 o'clock, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take my teeth out. Got to go to bed early. Get a good night's sleep. Catch my flight in the morning. Go to bed at 10. 1:41. Boom! Wide awake.
Oh, my God.
Cannot sleep. Cannot do anything. I count the sheep. I do all the other kind of crazy stuff that people tell me you're supposed to do when you have trouble sleeping, because I never have trouble sleeping. And nothing works. So, you know, I turn on the hotel TV, and of course the hotel TV, like most hotel TVs, has an expansive channel roster of like 13. And so I flip through them about 20 times, and, you know, looking for a movie or something I could fall asleep to. No luck. My Name is Earl on 3 of the channels.
Hey, I hope you know the company's not paying for that upgrade to get all those TV channels you had. Because usually it's like 4 channels and then like 6 for the actual hotel itself.
My Name is Earl, 3 channels out of my 13. Now, granted, you know, a good sitcom, used to watch it, but not exactly what I was looking for to help me drift off to sleep. I think that Fran Drescher nanny disaster was on one of the channels.
That's a train.
And then, of course, they get all the news channels. So I had 47 talking heads blathering at 1:40 in the morning on the different sides. So what saved me, though, Chris, was not one, not two, but 3 poker shows were on at 1:41 in the morning.
Let me see if I can guess what they are.
All right, go ahead.
Poker After Dark?
Maybe. You know, is that the one with the sponsored by the site not affiliated with Anti-Up?
Yeah, that would be correct.
Okay, all right, that was one of them then.
There is the show that is sponsored by Anti-Up, or sponsors Anti-Up, and that's the Poker Stars Big Game.
The Big Game was on. I watched Chris and Joe for a little bit.
And then I guess I'd have to guess and say World Series.
That is correct. The World Series, I have not watched really more than 2 hands of the World Series this year. But now I feel like I'm a freaking expert, because that was always on TV. I kept flipping between these 3 and eventually drifted off and got a quality 4-hour night of sleep. But I don't know what I would do without that, because I would have had to watch My Name is Earl, I guess.
I got to tell you, late night is the place to have poker, because, you know, it's when poker players are awake, really. So,
except this. Not this.
Well, you were awake until you put it on. I tell you, it's the part. My wife wants to watch, like, Gabe Kaplan, because that will knock her out when she wants to go to sleep. Anything with Gabe Kaplan in it, you know, just knocks her right out. So she's thankful when he's on. But, you know, this last week, speaking of Gabe, he was on that cash game that they had on Poker After Dark with Tom Dwan and Viffer.
Right.
So I can't believe it was a 2-week-long cash game. So they switched seats and rotated seats or whatever for the second week. But Tom Dwan, the guy is just unbelievable. I mean, usually he'll just start out winning millions and then stay there, and then the show ends, and you're like, oh, my God, Tom Dwan won millions again. But this time he pulled a Cosenza and lost, like, $600,000, all right? Wow. And in the last 2.5 episodes, out of 10 episodes, he won it all back and posted a winning session of like $15,000. I just can't believe it. He had one hand against Patrick Antonius, where he had kings, and Antonius had tens. Antonius called a big raise. The flop came with a 10. And they bet and got a big bet in there. And on a turn, he turned 3 kings and got all of Antonius's money to get almost to even. It's just absolutely remarkable, the comeback this guy had and the way he plays. It's just ridiculous, the hands he makes people lay down, because he just has no regard for money at all. He just knows what you have, and if he bets enough, you're going to freaking run screaming into the night and fold. I mean, it's just absolutely unbelievable to watch this kid play. It really is.
Absolutely.
And then the other thing is, one guy who came back and the other guy who wished he didn't was the Loose Cannon. I don't know if you know this, but they actually had someone for the first time come back for a second show.
Wow. 'Cause
they all have to post, you have to, whatever you win over your $100,000, you get to keep.
Right.
But if you do win over your $100,000 starting mark, you get the option of coming back one more time or taking it and going. So they all take the money and run when they do.
Right,
win,
of course. You know? Why not? Yeah.
Yeah. But this guy, and he's from my old stomping grounds too, from Connecticut. Father of 3, and he like he's like a bakery goods delivery man, you know? So you would think that a guy with three kids, young kids, and delivering baked goods, when he gets a profit, you'd think he's going to keep it. So he's up 16 grand after the first week, and he says, I'm coming back. And everyone's like, oh my God, he's coming back. So I'm sure he thought when he came back that he would face the same five players that he was beating up on. Well, sorry about that. What does he win, Johnny? Well, he wins a date with Danny Negreanu, Doyle Brunson, Barry Greenstein, what's his name? The kid from Bodog. what the hell is his name? I'm forgetting. I'm blanking out here. But, Justin Bonomo. I mean, talk about a killer table. And I think it was Bonomo. He may have been on this week. I'm not sure. But anyway, no, it was Bonomo. So he ended up losing the entire $116,000 and going home with, you know, his tail between his legs. I mean, how could you come back? Consider yourself lucky. Go home and spend 16 grand on those beautiful little children. You know, no. You're greedy. You come back, and what do you get? You get the greatest players in the world just chomping at the bit to get all your cash. Ridiculously embarrassing. You know, if you win the most money, you get that $50,000 NAPT pass too. You get to play in all their events next year, and I can see how that's, you know, enticing and lucrative to you. But really, I mean, really, is a delivery man of baked goods going to actually go out on tour and spend 50 grand on, you know, because you can't keep the money. I think you have to go on tour. So really, I mean, give me a break. I couldn't believe it. So speaking of TV, I mean, that watching that, I couldn't go to sleep watching that. I had to sit there and just laugh at this poor guy. You know, it's kind of like when, I don't know, I'm real negative, you know, when I watch.
Really?
Yeah. Like when I watch Family Feud.
This is a new Chris
Kattenza. Family Feud, when I used to watch Family Feud as a kid, I just like root for them not to get
the
money.
You root for them to lose? You root for them to get the $5 for every point? Yes. $943, and I watch them all smile like, you know, they actually won the 20 grand.
Exactly. That's what I would do, man. I'd watch the show and just be like, oh, or remember Deal or No Deal? Same thing.
Of course.
I'd be rooting for like the high numbers to be opened on the. Yes, they opened the $1 million suitcase. Yes, they opened a $500,000 suitcase. You get nothing. Oh, man, this cracks me up.
But there is a difference between Family Feud and The Big Game and Deal or No Deal. I mean, on the latter games, you've got that choice. You make that decision. I mean, are you happy with what you got, or are you a greedy mofo?
Mofo.
You know, Family Feud, I mean, it's not like, I mean, it's like, you know what? Sorry, Steve Harvey. You know what? We don't want to take the shot to 20 grand. We're going to take whatever we want in the normal game. So
Steve Harvey?
Yeah, he's the new host.
Is he really?
He is.
I heard that everybody who hosts that show wants to commit suicide and actually does.
Oh, man. Wow, time to move on here. But yeah, I mean, it's funny how people get, at one point. In one sense, I guess it's money that's not yours, right? That's what you say.
Yeah.
That's what they try to make you think when you're in the casino and, you know, you've had a good run of blackjack. Now I'm playing the casino's money. Yeah. No, you're not. You're playing your money.
Yep. If you looked right now, it's your money.
You could pick it up and walk it out. No one's going to stop you. That's your money. So it's not their money. It's not like you're reaching your hand into the well there and pulling out a couple green chips. So, but I do think that's funny. I think that's exactly what happens on these shows. They're like, you know, hey, I've never had 50 grand. You know what? But I've never had 5 million. Let's go. So I share your desire to find ill will on the, but not Family Feud. Come on.
Well, all right. So maybe I didn't root so hard at Family Feud as I did with like Deal or No Deal.
Well, you also probably root for people to lose on Apes too. That's just kind of the kind of guy you are, right?
Just you, buddy.
Oh, okay. All right. Of course, our next Apes event is coming up Saturday, October 30th at noon. It will be No Limit Hold'em. We'll be fresh off our poker cruise, so we'll be raring to go because we'll actually get to play some cards on the cruise. So I'm not going to be this rank amateur that I have been the rest of my life here when we started the business, and then I don't even know what a card is anymore.
Yeah, you'll have changed your tune. When you come home, you won't say crappy No Limit Hold'em anymore.
And, of course, you can take a poll at the slot machine tomorrow or Saturday, October 23rd at noon in our free roll. Top 10 folks get a seat. And you and I will not be competing in that because we will be loading up the truck for for the cruise. So that's two high profile, highly skilled No Limit Hold'em free roll specialists that will not be in the field on Saturday. So
take advantage of it while you still can. you know, one other thing I want to bring up too is we're always looking for stuff to put on the website that people might be of interest, and we're always hearing about that Twitter thing, you know. So we decided, hey, why not put a Twitter feed on our homepage and then have its own dedicated page to pretty much all the popular people in poker who have Twitter feeds. So check out our homepage now. We have Twitter on there if you guys want to check out, you know, what's going on, you know, what Grinder's having for breakfast or whatever. So it's there, and enjoy.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I'm glad we got it on there, and, you know, Twitter is really taking off. I'm still kind of wrapping my head around it a little bit, and, I'm taking some knocks. We took some knocks in the survey. They're like, hey, Scott, you're only following one person. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing following people. So I don't know. So hopefully this will help me focus on figuring out what exactly what Twitter means to people. But interested in the breakfast, we got it on our page now. All right, so, you know, I got home, been traveling a lot, and I've been jonesing for my Boardwalk Empire. You know, even though they had that that rant-inspiring poker flaw a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
Get home, but I can't quit it. I love it. And, of course, when I get home, the hotline's ringing. And it's our good friend and resident Anti-Up historian, Lauren, taking me to task about my comments. So let's hear what he had to say.
Hey, guys, it's Lauren calling, and I'm listening to the very beginning of this week's show, and you're on your tirade against Boardwalk Empire saying, I'll see your bet and I'll raise you. And I'm just wondering, has that always been a sin? I mean, the show takes place, I haven't watched it yet, but I presume, like, in the 1920s. Is it possible that that was before the rule against, you know, string raises? Just wanted to put that out there. Perhaps, you know, historical accuracy trumps modern etiquette.
Well, you know, here's the funny thing. I was listening to this, actually, on my computer in Jamaica when it came in, and the wife was in the room, and she started giggling like a schoolgirl. She's like, aha, I think he caught you. And I'm like, no, I'm going to check. I'm going to check, wife. Quicker giggling right now. I'm going to find out. And, of course, I'm in beautiful Jamaica. Lots of great things I could be doing. Sun, free drinks, food. But no, I spent the day on Google trying to debunk Lauren. And I came up with nothing. I don't think we can prove whether what he's saying is true or not. But it is intriguing.
Well, here's the thing. All you got to do is hunt down Doyle Brunson. He's old. He's been around. I think he check raised Wild Bill Hickok a few times. So really, just ask Doyle what the rules were back then during Boardwalk Empire. He'll tell you. I'm telling you. Next time I see him, I'm asking him. I'm going out to Vegas in, what, a week and a half, 2 weeks, whatever. When I get out there, I'm going to look for him specifically and say, look, I know you were around when Bugsy Siegel was starting this and all that, and back when there was, you know, the Prohibition. Tell me, all right? Just let me know. Was it allowed to say that you call and raise, or was string betting, like, invented with Fred Flintstone? I mean, tell me, because I want to know. He'll know.
That's the best we're going to get, I think. Because I tell you, one thing you don't want to do is Google history of poker, because what you're going to get is about 498 rakeback sites that put some BS little four-line history of poker on their site to trick you in again to get your rakeback. So.
Yeah, absolutely. That's hilarious. You ever notice, too, they all copy and paste someone else's, so it's all the same story on, like, 80 different sites. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, no one else bothered to call the hotline this week, so Lauren, your call will serve as our hotline, but of course you've called 47 times. No more swag for you. But everybody else, please call us at 813-448-1120. We've got stuff that we want to give out.
Yeah.
We don't get to keep this stuff. So, you know, if it doesn't give out, we don't give it out to someone, it doesn't get given out.
Just sits there and collects dust in Scott's office.
Right. Exactly. So, and if you call in, you might win a great prize, like a T-shirt from PMS Pokerwear, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys at PMSPokerwear.com. That shirt. Yeah. Not going to anyone this month.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll have to, you know, maybe somebody will call us. It's not that nobody calls the line. It's just like some guys are calling and saying, hey, what's going on, guys? And then they hang up. You know, I mean, you can't use stuff like that. So, I mean, you got to call it some sort of content, you know.
It's got to be useful.
Hey, okay, let's hear what happened this week on the NEF News Desk.
Dan Harrington and Eric Seidel are this year's inductees into the Poker Hall of Fame. The World Series of Poker announced the two will be formally inducted on November 8th as part of this year's November 9 festivities.
I will be there or be square. No, I'm going to be there for that. I wonder what that's going to be like. Again, very disappointing. Tom McAvoy does not get in. And the longer he doesn't get a win and get further away from his Binion's Cup victory, and you know, the harder it's going to be. I really can't believe he didn't get in again this year. Not that these two aren't deserving, because, you know, good God, they've got, you know, the greatest accolades in the world between them. But come on, guys, give me a break.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what McAvoy has left to do to prove here. I mean, I guess maybe he's got to write another book or something. Win another big tournament. I don't know. You know, the rest of the list. You know, a lot of those folks are all going to get in, and I think that's what the release said, that, you know, these guys are all well qualified. You know, it's just going to take some time. You know, you don't want to let everybody in at the same time, but certainly folks like McAvoy, you know.
it's going to require him to either drop dead or win, like, the main event again. You know what I mean? Those are the two things that, you know, it's just ridiculous that they're making him wait this long to get in. You know, that's why they should have, like, a real committee.
Well, you know, congratulations to Dan. He's always been one of my favorite players. And, of course, Eric Seidel, my favorite interview subject.
Yeah, absolutely, man. He put you in your place. That was pretty great.
Yeah. He doesn't tolerate any shenanigans during the interview process. So be careful. When you interview him over this great accolade, have your facts together, Chris, because he's going to call you on it.
And now I'm going to ask him, too, about taking his law practice public and having these commercials on TV. It's fantastic. Have you seen them yet? Eric Seidel is an attorney in your corner. It's hilarious.
Yeah, and but that's only because he's no longer on the Oldsmar City Council.
That's right, exactly. I was waiting for you to say that. All right, the World Series of Poker has announced that the Versus Network will air the 2010-2011 circuit events. Each event will get 2 hours of airtime. So I wonder, does that mean that it's still going to be like Lon and Norman doing all that stuff, or is it a totally different production company?
That's a good question. I know it's the same production company, I believe, in the release, but I don't believe they mentioned the host, and you know, maybe they will shake it up. Maybe they'll have some other new guys doing it.
Maybe they'll have some unknowns named Chris and Scott.
Ah, that would be great.
Yes.
That would be great.
Yes, I'm going to contact my friends at Versus. Let's see what they say.
Yeah, I've just checked my phone, and I do not have a call yet. So maybe they're just getting around to it. All right, then finally, and I love this item, Chris. We talked about it before, but the final results of Doyle Brunson's Twitter poll are out. See, Doyle Brunson knows how to use Twitter.
Yeah.
How come we don't?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to contact him on Twitter and ask him about that ruling about
There we go. You text, tweet, text Dolly there, and you get the answer.
All right.
But anyhow, his results of his Twitter poll are out, and Shannon Elizabeth is the player that men most want to have sex with, while Gus Hansen is the player women most want to have sex with. Phil Lack is tops on the list of players you want to hang out with, and Phil Hellmuth is the player we all want to kill.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
Well, and the most interesting thing I thought was Jennifer Tilly showed up on the list of players we want to have sex with, both for men and women. You know you're doing something right when you got the whole world wanting to.
Oh, my God. That's awesome.
The headboard for you.
I wonder if he would have changed their mind had they known. No, never mind. I'm not going to say anything. I am not finishing that sentence. Who knows who's listening to our show now that we're all the way up in the Connecticut and New York and the magazine, you know, who knows? So I'm not saying anything there. That's it. That's as far as I go. All right. Well, let's move on to our mailbag. This comes from Joe Morris, my favorite Giants running back. Oh, no, wait. This is Joe Morris from Hammond, Louisiana. I'm sorry. I thought it was the Joe Morris running back who gave the Giants their first NFL title back in 86. But, all right.
Very well could be the same one.
So here's the big question. Whenever we do this on Skype, we never know who's going to actually read the mailbag. Is it going to be me or is it going to be you?
Well, you know, I tried to pare this one down, but gosh golly, there's just some good stuff in it. So I'll go ahead and read it.
Okay.
And bear with me. It's kind of long, but it's good stuff. So,
how about just ask the last question? Any thoughts? There you go.
Handy thoughts.
All right,
yeah,
so here are my thoughts.
Freeform answering. All right, here's what Joe wants to know. He says, from time to time on the podcast, we mention the challenges of putting up with raucous or insane players, i.e. Chris and Faso.
Yeah.
Joe said, I recently encountered one. The game is the ubiquitous 4/8 spread limit variety of Hold'em found across Mississippi and Louisiana. He said the game on this night was loose and aggressive. Most times there's not a raise in the first round of betting. Blinds are 1-2, but someone will put a straddle. And it's not uncommon at a full table to hear the dealer quip, only 8 players to the flop. Oh, I love that. That's perfect. He says, now answers our villain. There's one guy who thinks he is God's gift to poker. He lumbers over with a drink in tow from the no-limit table. He's in every hand. He likes to straddle. Check in the dark. Bet in the dark. Call in the dark. In one case, he bet and raised in the dark all the way to showdown. With this nut at the table, there's no way to read him from betting patterns, no way to pick up tells. And more than once, he probably states, I love 4/8 limit because I can piss everyone off. All right, admittedly, Joe says, Chris, admittedly, it is his right to play that way. There's no rule against it. However, normally at this casino, this is a friendly game. That is, dealers are friendly, the players are friendly and courteous, and win or lose, you end up having a good time and get more valuable experience playing poker. All right, he says, this quote-unquote gentleman sucked out on me 4 times in the river over the course of 3 hours, turning what would have been a profitable night into an unprofitable one, not to mention the aggravation, being rivered occasionally when you can get your money in good as part of poker. But playing Wally just to be a jerk, in my opinion, ruins the sanctity of the game. Wow.
Hmm.
Sanctity.
Words like ubiquitous and sanctity in one letter. By the way, ubiquitous for the uninitiated means everywhere, all at once.
Everywhere, yes. And notice I haven't messed up either one of those big words.
We could rewind the ubiquitous quote, but whatever.
Okay. All right, okay. All right, he says, I happen to think that poker is an honorable endeavor. It's not gambling per se, and it's part of the rich history of our nation. Cue God Bless America, Chris. The type of behavior I describe, however, is pure gambling. You might as well be spinning the big wheel on the casino floor. Now, Joe says he did not complain to the player, the dealer, or the room manager. He did leave earlier than he'd planned because there's no way to make a comeback with this player at the table. And so his first question, he says, Chris, if a player like this causes players to leave, the pot will be smaller and the casino rake smaller. The table breaks for lack of players. What has this nit accomplished? If he wants to win money, he's taken the wrong approach. His stack fluctuated wildly as a result of his play. What do you say?
I think that, this guy wants entertainment. And if all he can play is a 4/8 game and he wants to play that way, it's your duty to learn how to beat him. You know, if you want to move or whatever, that's fine. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with what he's doing. You know, he's not breaking any rules. He's not angle shooting. He's not, there's something. If he's berating somebody, then he would get a warning and get thrown out. But really, he's not doing anything wrong. You know, the casino can't do anything.
Absolutely. I agree, and Joe agrees, too, because that's what he said. But his question, though, is what has this nit accomplished by doing this?
Well, he's entertained. He's getting entertained. The money means nothing to him. So he's being entertained by, you know, making everybody get frustrated and just having fun. His first thing he said when he sat down was, I love doing it because I could piss everybody off. That's what he wants to do. He gets off on other people's misery. So that's what he's accomplished. That's his, you know, whatever.
And I think the real problem with this, too, these are the guys that don't care about losing either.
Yeah, he doesn't care. He's just there to have fun and get drunk.
Go, ha, 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 I was trying to bluff you with deuce four, and his stack is gone. He just either reloads or gets up and grabs another drink. So
yeah, he's there to get drunk and be entertained, and that's what he's doing. Now, if you offered a 10-20 game, or if he was in a 10-20 game, he probably wouldn't be doing that. He'd be buckling down and trying to win some money. So, I think that's what he's accomplished, is just being entertained for the meager stakes that they are to him. You know, I mean, to me, 4/8, I'm happy, but with him, he's probably just miserable and has a ton of money to get rid of.
All right, well, Joe continues. Would the casino floor ever think about asking a wild player to leave in the same vein that a card-counting blackjack player is banned from the casino? Because he could be costing the casino rake in the long run, besides running off customers. And he did say, by the way, this player was admonished by the dealer a couple times for taking too much, talking too much about the cards in the hand before the hand was over.
Yeah, no, that would never happen either. Because it's such an intangible. I mean, you can't measure how much this guy is costing you in rake, and I'm sure an entire table isn't going to get up and leave because this guy's playing loose. It's people's dreams to play against people who don't care about money and who don't really know what they're doing. He may be frustrated by the way this guy acts, and granted, I wasn't there, so it could be absolutely you know, ridiculously, you know, obnoxious. But to me, you know, really, you want to be, and if he wants to leave, leave, you know, and if he doesn't, then he's going to have to put up with it. But really, there's no way they would just throw somebody out because they're a crazy loose player who likes to bluff. I mean, that's every player in Vegas.
Well, no, I agree with you, but I do think it makes a point that, you know, if people get frustrated, breaks the table, that does cost the casino money. So I would be surprised if there is actually a manager or two somewhere out there that would try to find a way, probably not to kick the guy out, but try to find a way to save this game if he sees that happening.
Well, what do you say to the guy? You walk up to him and say, I'm going to give you a warning for bluffing? I'm going to give you a warning for saying, ha, ha, I'm wasting my money?
Well,
what do you say
to
him?
I'm not saying you would do this, or I would ever do this.
Right.
You know, let's say, for example, this jerk just happened to be one of the 240 people sailing on the Antioch Poker Cruise next week. All cabins gone, by the way. Too late. you know what? Poker rooms are allowed to deny service to anybody for any reason. So if I think they're making, if somebody's making my players that are valuable, that are there because they want to be there, not there to just be a jerk, uncomfortable, I think I would be hard pressed not to try to intervene in some manner and at least talk to the guy and say, hey, you know, you're free to do what you want to do. You're making people uncomfortable. It's going to cost me some business. What's your deal? Don't know if he's going to get up and leave or anything, but...
Yeah, no, I think that there are a lot of managers who would pull somebody aside and talk to them and say, you know, what's going on. And again, maybe his letter was pretty long, and he did give us a lot of details, so I can't imagine there's much more. But maybe he is saying things that he shouldn't be saying, and then maybe he could get banned or thrown out for a day or two based on what he's saying, and those things are fine, you know. But if he's not really cussing and he's just enjoying himself by making other people lose money, really, I mean, what are they going to do? I mean,
yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, are you really worried about losing this guy's business?
No, that's true too.
I mean, how many managers that we talk to on our road trips, so they say, you know, hey, it's late at night. There's a gentleman. He's probably drinking a little much. He starts to swear a little bit. We come over and we say, hey, buddy, maybe it's just time for you to call it a night. You're more than welcome to come back tomorrow, but I think you've outstayed your welcome tonight. I could see a case versus the same thing this guy, and of course he's probably going to bark right back. What am I doing that's wrong? And a good manager, I think, could explain, you're not doing anything wrong, but we just think it's time for you to go tonight.
Yeah, no, and I agree, but to a point, I mean, where do you draw that line then? And also, what about all this guy's friends? You know, what if he has a bunch of friends, and then all of a sudden you're throwing your friends?
You really think this guy has friends?
Well, he might have friends in a 10-20 game that he can't get into that night.
These kind of people act like this because they don't have friends. Attention that they crave, so they go and do what they got to do to get the attention.
Yeah.
This guy has no friends, Chris. I haven't even met him, but I know this guy is friendless.
Okay, all right. Well, you're probably right. I do think that there would be a manager who would talk to the guy if it got that to that extent. Or just could be our friend Joe Morris venting one night and, you know, not happy with this one guy. But, you know, I mean, did anybody else leave? Did anybody say to him, hey, you know, I can't stand playing with this guy. I want a table change or, you know, whatever. Because that's what I would do. I'd just, if I was miserable, I'd just get a table change. Let him keep doing what he wants to do where he is, and I'll go play another table. And if there isn't one, well, then I either adjust or I leave. You know, or I tell management, say, this guy's making it miserable for everybody, and let a floor guy come over and observe while they're playing. And then let him make the decision because ultimately it's their property.
Absolutely. All right. Well, he has a second question, which I guess is a third question, technically. what should I do as a player in this situation? Be patient, play tight, and wait for a good hand in late position to crush him. Leave the table, complain to the poker room manager. And he says, and here's a good point, Chris. I have to drive 1.5 hours to get to this casino. And unlike Vegas, the next casino is not a few footsteps away. So obviously it's easy for us to say, just pick up and go to the other 4A game, but there's not another 4A game, then you can't do that.
Right.
And then it's easy for us to say, just go to the next casino, but if it's an hour and a half, you can't do that. If you've made that drive to play poker, you're going to be just as ticked off to get in the car and go home because you had this one idiot. It's a rock and a hard place, right?
Right. I mean, I'm going to stay and play if I have to drive an hour and a half. You know, although there was that one time I went all the way to Foxwoods when I was in Connecticut.
Right.
And I waited 6 hours to play and got a profit after 20 minutes on the left. So I'm not too bright when it comes to stuff like that. But I would just stick it out. And as far as strategy against this guy, I probably would be patient and play tight and, you know, get up. When you're folding, limit hands take a long time. So if you fold, you know, get up and walk around. Don't sit around this guy. Just only when you're playing in hands with him is when you have to deal with it. So I would play tight, wait for a good hand, and crush him and make him go broke.
Yeah, it's frustrating, but you're going to have to wait for good hands. That's really the best you can do. I mean, I think the worst thing you could do is get too loose and try to play his game.
Yeah, the last thing you want to do is get involved with a guy who doesn't care about money in a raising war. You know.
Yeah, if you start raising him with 6-3 off, he's going to re-raise you.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You know, then you've turned it into more of a bingo game. All right, well, hey, next time, Joe, write something, man.
You know, give us details. Tell us something.
Absolutely. These short little mailbag questions are just driving me crazy. but no, we kid, Joe. We appreciate the email. Good discussion. And we are going to send you a deck of J-Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com. They are the official playing cards of Anti-Up. So email us your address. And anybody else has a question for the mailbag? That email address is podcast@antiupmagazine.com.
All right. We continue our ride along with the great Detective Columbo. We found out last week that we ended up shoving and our opponent folded, so we picked up a decent amount of 1,900 chips. Now we're at 50 and 100, the levels, and we limp with pocket threes in early position. And it folds to the big blind who checks. The flop came 6 of clubs, 3 of clubs, 4 of hearts. And now the big blind bets out 200, which is kind of weird. Do we raise here or do we wait until the turn, Scott?
Well, one, I'm trying to figure out why Big Ben is in this game. But
Big Ben. Did I say Big Ben?
You said Big Ben. I mean, he should be out violating women.
Very nice.
All right. This is a very dangerous board to give essentially a free card to, especially when you're against the big blind in an unraised pot, right?
Yeah.
And then beyond that, though, I think we have the added value of our opponent not thinking and we hit any piece of this. I mean, if you're in the big blind and you see a flop like this, even if I didn't get anything, I'm going to bet that because I'm more likely to hit that than my opponent that's limped, right?
Yep.
So the fact that we have a huge piece of this is all the more reason to absolutely raise, and I would love for somebody to talk me out of raising here.
No, not me. I'm not going to be the one to talk you out of it. I like a raise here just because the board, you know, it's basically wetter than a Cirque du Soleil show at Bellagio. You know what I'm saying? So, you know.
I can't afford to see those, but.
I actually saw, it was pretty good. I'm serious, too. I actually saw it in 98.
No, I know. And I'm laughing that you spent that kind of money to go see it.
So. No, I didn't actually, though. The tickets were free. So. And they were free. The bet out likely by this blind could have something like 7-6. But we really want to let the big blind dictate, you know, the price of the turn? No way. I'm going to make it 650.
No, this is my pot, man. I'm in there, and, you know, if he wants something, I mean, the worst case, we're up against, you know, the unlikely flop straight, right?
Right.
And even then we have outs to it.
Yeah, we have 10 outs, so. I like the raise here, and I think the forum likes the raise, too. Everybody on the forum at antiupmagazine.com/forum says to raise, so.
Unanimous. How often do we get unanimous on the forum now?
Only when there's one answer. when there's one guy answering, that's when we get unanimous. When there's a few, it's pretty rare. So, and take it.
Usually we have Rant and Gundam, and then we have everyone else. But no, everybody's in agreement on this one. So,
okay, well, let's see what happens, and then hear how further we get.
Welcome back. We had a pot of 200, and our big blind suddenly bets out 200, and we're wondering, with a pot of 400 and a set, do we want to raise now or be coy? I think this is an easy argument for raising now. First of all, I want to increase the pot size enough that I can get all his money in on the turn. Second, I don't want to trigger his internal alarm system by raising on the turn that I have a big hand. Third, I'm not going to sit here and be afraid of a flush draw, especially when I can pot commit him now.
You know, I once checked the coat and completely forgot that I'd done that till I got back home.
I raise it up to 600, knowing full well that either my money's going in now or it's going in on the turn. When he smooth calls and then checks the jack of heart turn, I simply need to put my 2,400 remaining chips into the pot. Luckily for me, he has a pretty good holding for this board, the 4 of clubs, 5 of spades, giving him a gut shot with a pair. So, thinking on bluffing, he makes the call. The river is the king of diamonds, and we rake a pretty big pot. We now have about 5,500 in chips, and we're in the 8160 level. And we get Jack in early position. Well, there's no choice really but to raise to 480 here and see who calls. Interestingly enough, the only caller we're going to have is the hijack, who's the big stack at the table with twice our chips, who smooth calls preflop. The flop is 6 of spades, 4 of club, 9 of spades, and I'm going to protect my overpair here by betting most of the pot with 800. Much to my surprise, the big stack comes over the top all in, and I've got 3,800 behind. Do I want to call or do I want to fold?
This is Graham. He's new to PokerStars. Graham doesn't know it yet, but he's a VIP. He's entitled to claim points against any number of rewards in the PokerStars VIP program. From PlayStations to plasmas, from Porsches to seats at major on- and offline poker tournaments. You see, he started collecting VIP points the minute he joined PokerStars as a real money player. Because we don't think you should have to apply or be in the know to earn rewards. He'll be very excited when he finds out. Just you wait and see. Wait for it. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP and find out why all other reward schemes seem just a little, well, inaccessible. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
All right, well, you know, we like to save up a couple stuff to do a little different show every once in a while, Chris, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we've done a lot of the interviews lately. Some people love the interviews, some people hate them. So we like to mix it up, and, you know, I've been saving a couple top 10 lists. About poker that I've seen come up in our news feeds over the last couple months. And we got two of them today. You know, we're going to squish them together, make it a little Oreo show. We got enough stuffing with the two lists to do it. And I just thought it'd be interesting to go over these top 10 lists and kind of pick apart what we think about these lists and whether we have anything to add to them. Sound fun?
Yeah, I like it. I've reviewed these lists, and it's funny. I always want to come up with my own lists. And I never end up doing it. We used to do that top five thing for the magazine. We stopped doing that. But
well, it's hard. It really is.
It's hard to pull some original.
You could do a crappy one pretty easy. But, you know, I don't like to do anything crappy other than the show. So, you know, when I'm doing a part of the show, I want it to be really good. So
well, one of the things, and I'm not sure which one we'll start with, but it's amazing how, you know, you and I are publishers of a poker magazine, and yet some of this stuff, it's like, really?
Yeah.
I never heard of that, you know, or whatever.
I'm glad you said that, buddy, because I was feeling a little stupid here. So, so good. We're both stupid. All right, well, we're going to start with the top 10 most overused poker terms.
Yeah, good.
And this was compiled by our good friends and partners at PokerNews.com. And I actually didn't put a name on it, so we don't know which staffer there did it. So maybe it's a group consensus there.
Yeah.
The Poker News staff. And essentially they lead off this article by saying if you spend any time at the poker tables recently or even watching poker on TV, then you might start shaking your head in agreement with this list. You've probably rolled your eyes a couple times upon hearing these overused poker terms, and no matter what, they may not ever become tolerable. You might, however, catch yourself saying them because, well, that's just what happens when you're around something enough.
Oh, man. Well, in the first one that they list, number 10, the word donkey, which, you know, actually ticks a lot of people off, but not because it's overused, right?
I was going to say, our magazine has a little history with it. It was almost the undoing of our magazine. Our very first issue, trying to put a letter to the editor in there, right, to get some and we take a very good letter from one of our podcast listeners, because we didn't have readers at that point, right?
Right.
And he was complaining about the 5-10 game with $100 buy-in down here and called players to play at donks.
We were almost one and done. That's basically it. We always had one issue, and that was it, man.
The rage. So, you know, I guess it's the poker version of the N-word, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's that harsh, but it's pretty bad.
The poker version. I mean, the poker versus real life is a very minor thing, all right? So I'm not comparing it. I'm just saying it's scalable, you know.
Scalable. Yeah, I think that
I mean, it's the one thing that that some people have a little you know, a little hair up the rear end about, right? You know, don't call people donkeys. That's rude. And I'm like, are you serious? We're playing poker. Come on. But we know we've been relying on people like that, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Take great offense to this, even when you're not calling them that, if you call somebody else that. Yeah. If you call yourself that, they're like, oh, my gosh, don't call yourself that.
It's a social game, you know? And you want, you shouldn't be mean to people. It's a social game. So I understand. And the funny thing is they said, is it just us, or does it seem that only players who actually use the term are actually donkeys themselves? Which is pretty funny because, you know, the person who uses the most is like Mike Masso. Well, he usually says idiot, you know, which to me is more offensive than donkey, but whatever.
All right, number nine, and maybe we're in agreement on this one. I hope we are. Degen.
Yeah. I mean, I know what it means, but I've never heard anybody just say degen.
On a list of most overused, it's a word that I've never actually heard used. So maybe we're just not in the same circles as the poker news staff here, but they say, okay, so maybe there aren't many adjectives that are so concisely describe some of the, well, degens in the world, but maybe it's only used as a verb, as in, quote-unquote, just had a kick-ass steak and ready to degen for a couple hours. Time to take an English class, people, and stop degenning it up all the time.
I don't know what... I mean, it doesn't even make sense.
I don't get it. Maybe I'm not even pronouncing it right. I think I am. Degenerate, right? But
degenerate. I think you're saying it just right.
Never heard it.
It's certainly not Deegan. I'm gonna go Deegan it up for a while. Oh man, I tell you, for overused terms, I want to hear somebody use that on the ship this week. I don't think I'm gonna hear it, but number eight. That's so bad.
That's so bad.
It just sounds like English to me.
Yeah, yeah. And they go on to say it probably wasn't as bad as you think.
Hey. Plus you probably
Look at it. People are calling me to find explain what D-Gen is.
That's so bad to have that thing go off in the middle of a show. I'm so glad we're in a studio.
Yeah, see, that's so bad. I don't know. I don't know if that's overused. It's kind of milquetoast, I think.
Yeah, and it's just
there's
English,
a lot of worse things people say, and some of them are on the list too. So I'm gonna have to say we're batting one out of three here.
Yeah,
so.
Right now we're still going to the Hall of Fame because we're a 300 hitter, but we're limping in. I think is what's going on here. That's so bad to me. It's just somebody saying that's so bad. I mean, it's not you know. Whatever, but all right. The next one's pretty good. Nice hand.
Yep.
Well, they said it drives them nuts. People see aces versus kings preflop, and when aces win, they say nice hand when all the money was going in, no matter what. Or people double up when they get quads, and they say nice hand. Well, who couldn't play quads that way, right? It is pretty funny, nice hand. Yeah, you had something to do with building those two aces that were in your hand at the same time someone else had pocket kings, you know.
Yeah, I tell you, when people say nice hand to me, when it's almost always a situation like this, whether you know a trained snail could play the hand the same way I did. I usually try to let them know that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, yeah, oh, thanks, but I mean, what else could I do? Or you know, hey, you just got lucky. Well, yeah, and it's kind of me reinforcing, hey, quit it. All right, I know it's not a nice hand. You know it's not a nice hand. If you're upset that I had a monster against you, say that. Be honest.
Well, my favorite thing to do online is when someone types in NH, I type in YIW.
Yes.
And then they always are like, what is YIW? And I'm like, yes, it was. You know, just, you know, because what else can I do except tick them off? You know, I'm not going to go through the whole explanation of, oh, I just got lucky or, you know. So I just say, YIW. And then I usually do it like an apes because everybody knows what that means and they laugh.
Yeah.
But, oh, man, nice hand. You don't mean it. You know, it's like wishing somebody luck. You don't mean it when you're going up against them in a flip for your tournament light and they say good luck. You know, that's overused. That needs to be on this list.
Well, number six definitely belongs on here, Chris.
Oh, yeah.
One time! And I love that their short thing was, it's your 1,254th time. Please stop.
Well, you probably don't know this because generally you do get enough sleep. But when you're watching poker now, the new thing is, I'm going to use my one time now. I know, you know, I've probably said it in the past before, but I'm going to use my one time now. They say that now because they know that just saying one time is overused.
Yeah.
So they're trying to qualify it with something else. Or they'll say one more time, which is going to quickly add to this list real soon. One more time is going to make the overused terms, too. I think I'd rather put that on there than degen.
Yeah, and that's probably an angle shot on what I was going to say here, is that here's my thinking. I'm fine with one time, if you want to say one time. But your game, poker, is a verbal game, right? Verbal is binding.
Right, right.
So I say, when you say one time, and that one time hits, that's it.
That's it.
No more suckouts for you ever in the rest of your poker career. So use it judiciously. I know I'm not going to say it, but if you want to go ahead and throw it out there, good luck, buddy.
One extra time, please. That is pretty funny. Next one, chip and a chair. Every single time, without fail, someone will say this to a player who's been severely crippled in a tournament. Does this actually elicit hope from them? In our experience, no, it doesn't. It just annoys them, and usually the only thing that's left after about 5 minutes is the chair. Chair wins more times than the chip.
Oh, that's a good write in there. My problem with this is that when you're the chip in the chair guy, the last thing you want is that Nimrod in the 10 seat that's got 5,000 chips to remind you, hey, chip in the chair, anything can happen, sonny. Glad you've ruined you wore yourself down to you one chip and you had to be doing this. Kind of want to take that one chip and, like, you know, lodge it in the throat of the guy. And then take my chair.
I am here to say that the first tournament I ever won was the first tournament I ever played in, and I did have one chip. And somebody did say chip in the chair to me, literally once it happened, and I did win the tournament, which, you know, 30-player turbo at Derby Lane is not really that big of a deal. But when you have 100 units and everyone else has 10 grand, it was pretty wild. But, to be honest, it's pretty old. Pretty old saying.
And here, I'll let somebody say chip in a chair if their chip is a 5,000-unit chip.
Yeah, exactly.
They colored up, and they've got one orange bird there, and the big blind's 200, so they got to put it in and let the dealer make change. That would be funny. That way, say chip in a chair, and you're good in my book. All right, and, you know, all the kids, they do these abbreviations now, Chris.
Yeah, like YIW.
I've begrudgingly let myself fall into the OMG camp just because that's what people do, and I do overuse LOL, but I have never used FML, and I really don't like it because I just don't get it.
Oh, I think that's funnier than the actual entry, that you don't get it. That's great.
Well, I know what it stands for. I just don't get it.
I know. It's just hilarious. I don't get it either. I mean, I know. And another thing, too, is I think the only person I've ever seen use it was Gambit.
Yeah, I was going to say, Gambit and a bunch of girls on Facebook.
See, now, I wouldn't even know about that, so there you go. So I'm just basically living on Gambit's time. But FML, if you don't know what it means, look it up, because I'm not going to tell you. But basically, it just says that your life sucks, and like we all care, you know. But what they wrote here was, yeah, your life sucks, dude. You're so unlucky to be able to walk your sorry ass onto your two perfectly healthy legs out the door to your fancy car to drive past all the homeless guys on the street of your state-of-the-art grinding station at home. Sucks to be you.
Very good point. You know, we gotta remember how life has blessed us, even at the poker table, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You're lucky to even be able to play poker. Never mind, lose once in a while. But it is funny because I really don't, maybe I don't play enough online with enough, to see FML enough, but whatever. I don't think anyone ever says FML. That's the thing, is you got to take this list with online, you know, because
that's true.
If somebody sat next to me and went FML, I'd be like, what? Dude, really? Are you going to be like those girls in those text commercials when they're OMG, whatever. So just give me a break.
That's great.
The next one is anything with the word immense at the end, like donk immense, you know. And I'm assuming that, you know, remember when Barry Greenstein, when the online crew said, hey, you say donk immense on High Stakes Poker and we'll donate like money to your charity. And they ended up donating like 10 grand because he said LOL donk immense, you know. So I'm assuming that, you know, they're just saying like a tournament, but full of donkeys or idiots in the tournament, and that's immense. But then they started using it with everything, with immense on the end. I don't know. I guess it's overused in the online community, but really, you and I kind of remove ourselves from those kinds of things. But pretty funny.
All right, number two on the list is I run so bad. And they say, mathematically, over time, you run just as bad as everyone else, and no one really wants to hear it. And using it for non-poker play, as we did above, is just lame. Every time something doesn't go your way, you're not running bad. Just stop it.
I guess I better stop using it.
Clearly on the overused phrases in Chris Cosenza's vocabulary.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's true. Everything happened. But, you know, by nature, a lot of poker players are negative, you know, and it's like, you know, everything happens to just you, and I understand. But, yeah, I totally agree. I run so bad is like, it's just used every day. Every time you have a conversation with somebody how they're playing, that's what they say.
There's a little semantics here, too. I mean, I run so bad, I totally agree. But, man, I was running badly in that game tonight. Or I've been running badly lately. There's nothing wrong with that. That's just you're acknowledging that you're in the mathematical area where the stuff ain't working for you.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't find a problem with that. But you're continuing. I've ran bad my entire life. Then you know, maybe you need to pick up shoes and ladders or something else. Cause...
Yeah, and I think, too, at the table I hear it a lot, too, when they lose a flip or something. Man, I run so bad. You know, I hear that all the time. You know, and they don't win the fifth, you know, coin flip in a row. Oh, I run so bad. Dude, you just won three in a row and you're chip leader at the table. Relax, you know. But they'll still say it. So, all right, number one, so sick. The worst offender by far. How many times a day can something be so sick? Just trust us, it's not that sick. It's actually pretty standard. It's true. No, it's true. But the reason why you say it so much is because people tell you so many bad beat stories. Right? I mean, people are always coming up to you telling how they lost, and then you're like, oh, that's just so sick. Yeah. Yeah, because you're making me sick telling me so many stories I have to tell you.
Yes. Yeah, I'm going to say this is an accurate statement often. I am literally sick of you telling me this story. Or I am, you know, hey, great, you hit the one outer to knock me out of the tournament on the bubble. Yeah, I physically am sick right now. I'm not making – it's not just a phraseology here. I am really going to barf all over the table now.
That's what I was
going
to say. Next time somebody does it to me, I'm just going to throw up on the table instead of saying anything. You know, I'm just going to pull a Natalie Wood, stick my finger down my throat, and vomit all over the table.
Oh, man.
Too soon?
All right.
Too soon? Yep. Too soon? Too soon. So do you think there are any terms that aren't on the list that should be?
I'm trying to think. Maybe unreal.
Unreal. That's mine.
Unbelievable.
That's mine.
What else you say? The Cosenza.
The Cosenza. Yeah. Hello?
Well, those are way more overused than that now.
Well, I've got two.
Oh, you've got two, huh?
Yeah,
right.
I've got two terms. Ubiquitous and sanctity.
One and done with those, right?
I think those need to stay off the list for a while because they're pretty overused.
All right, well, our next list has got a little more layer to it, I think, and I'll be interested to see your thoughts on this because you watch a lot more poker on TV, and I think that's what's kind of getting at. Yeah. This is the top 10 overexposed poker pros, and this comes from Aaron Todd, who's the gaming guru on Casino City Times. Hmm. And he apparently does a lot of top 10s, and I did one on TV Pokers, which I need to check out at some point. Maybe we'll talk about that on a future show. But essentially what he says here is, whose presence on televised poker shows outshines their performance on the felt? And here are the top 10, and number 10 is Howard Lederer.
You know, it's interesting that he brings Howard Lederer up, only because, you know, Lederer actually sort of semi-retired for a while there so he could run full tilt a little more efficiently or whatever. So he didn't really play that much, but he's still a great player, and people want to see him playing because he's a great player. And I got to, you know, temper my reactions today a little bit because, you know, I'm starting to really understand that poker on television really is just about the entertainment, and we shouldn't be watching poker because they're great players or because, you know, we want to see great poker, because it's just not going to happen. It's an entertaining thing. So if you look at this list from that angle, his entire argument falls apart. Not that Howard Lederer is, just any stand-up comic or anything. But but really, you know, as far as, you know, you want to get somebody who's going to know the inside stories about the poker world while he's there talking on TV or whatever it is, I mean, I have no problem. This guy's got a World Series bracelet or two. He's got a couple of World Poker Tour titles. You know, he's even won some other stuff. He deserves to be on TV. And he, frankly, he's one of the very few who can afford the stakes that they're trying to put on television anyway.
That's true.
So, I mean, I'm probably going to have an issue with everybody on this list, to be honest.
Well, I think it's interesting you brought that up, because I was going to bring it up, too. I mean, when you say overexposed, you're almost admitting that you don't understand the televised poker arena. No one wants to watch Joe Schmo sit there and not say anything, not do anything on TV, regardless of how great a player he is.
Right.
It's just not good TV. So, and a lot of poker on TV now is, I don't want to say scripted, but they are invitationals. You know, they go out and find the people and plug them in that they know people want to watch.
Yeah.
So by nature, those people are going to be overexposed because they're interesting. Now, Howard Lederer, I love the guy. I used to, you know, I'm always in the quiet poker player's corner, the thinking kind of guys. But I can't say that, Howard Lederer's on tonight. Oh, got to set the TiVo for that.
and to say that he's overexposed, that he's been on TV too much, I mean, the guy is hardly ever on TV. And he's now finally come out of this sort of retirement thing and started playing more seriously again. And so he's only been on recently. I mean, you could literally watch from 2006 to 2009 and never see him on TV. Right. So I disagree already, right? I have to start with the first one, because I don't think he's overexposed, and I do deserve thinking. Now, here's the other thing you were bringing up about the thinking men and everything. You know, they had the Mayfair Club. Remember the original?
Right. Yeah.
Well, they had all the guys who used to play in that club once on Full Tilt, and it was like the worst show ever.
Right.
Harrington, Zolotow, Lederer, and two other guys no one's ever heard of. Right, and these guys, you know, they just sat there and played like they were actually at the Mayfair and didn't even talk. And when they were telling stories about the Mayfair Club that nobody even could recognize or even relate to. And it was probably the lowest rated Poker After Dark show ever in the history of the whole series. So, you know, you got to have people who are entertaining on TV regardless of their accomplishments. So, you know, let's not even finish this list. Let's just move on to the hand of the week.
All right, number 9, Antonio Esfandiari.
See, again... You know, and the funny thing is, have you ever, Scott, as a journalist, come up with an idea, a story idea that you think is great, and then all of a sudden you find 1, 2, 3, 4 facts that kind of make your story not that great, but you write it anyway?
Oh, of course, that's what journalism is all about.
That's what this guy did, because his whole thing was like, their accolades don't deserve... You know, they haven't won anything. They don't deserve to be on TV for what they've done recently. But as you go down this list, he'll say, sure, this guy's won this, and this guy's won that, and this lady's done this and that, but... And it's like, no, not but. These are all recent victories or recent deep runs. And, you know, same thing with Esfandiari. I mean, Esfandiari goes deep in the main event, like, every single year. And he deserves to be on TV because he's entertaining, he's funny, and he has won. And he's willing to play high stakes. But this guy's like... You know, just like Lederer, you know, he's got some bracelets and stuff, and he's made deep runs, and he's finished 24th in the main event. But the leading man at Victory Poker hasn't made a World Series or a World Poker Tour final table since 2005. You know, his quick wit and his penchant for table talk have him, you know, a must-have for shows, but his fame off the field has outshined his performance on it. Well, yeah, but really? Who are you going to replace Antonio Esfandiari with?
Well, here's my problem with this one is Antonio has made it clear several years ago that he was done playing poker to be playing poker.
Right.
That when, you know, he came up right at the right time, right when poker on TV was coming on, he became this character and he said, you know what? I can enjoy the poker lifestyle and people like watching me, so I'm going to get invited to all these invitationals. That's what I'm going to do. Now, obviously, he still plays.
Yeah.
But he was probably the first person to come out and say, hey, I'm a poker personality now, more than a player.
Yep.
And so by nature, I mean, it's almost impossible for him not to be overexposed in that sense, right? Yep.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And again, it's television. You know what I mean? It's not, you know, the library and you want to read an interesting book. We want to put on the TV and be entertained, and this guy's going to do it for you. Whether he's making fun of Helmuth or he's, you know, doing his dog and pony show with Phil Locke. One way or the other, you're going to be entertained with his Fondiari on the show, you know. The next one's Gavin Smith.
Yep.
Our good friend Gavin Smith. And again, this guy's like, sure, Gavin Smith won his first World Series of Poker bracelet this year.
What have you done for me lately?
Yeah, guys? Exactly. And he won the World Poker Tour Player of the Year in 2005. And, you know, and then in between, he sprinkled a final table in there from the World Series and a final table from the World Poker Tour. And a whole bunch of made-for-TV caches. And no one likes to watch Gavin more than I do, he said, especially after the cocktails have been flowing. But he's been on TV a lot more often than his play would warrant. What? Everybody, what's he want? Just Abe Mussari on the show every week?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
what the hell?
This is one of the bigger misses on the list, I think. Just that Coley defeats the whole purpose of his list, I think. So.
And the other thing, too, is Gavin's not on TV that much. That's the other thing with half this list. Like Lederer and Gavin, they're not even really on that much. If you really watch TV... First of all, he's never going to do the big show because it's Poker Stars, so he's not on that. He didn't make a deep run on ESPN, so you saw him for a couple of minutes, maybe. You know, and they said that he won his bracelet, you know. And he's only on Poker After Dark every once in a while, and even then I haven't seen him very much lately, and he never plays the cash games on there. So, really? Is he really overexposed? Give me a break. I would venture a guess that there are still a lot of poker fans out there who don't even know who he is.
That's true. I think you're probably right.
So overexposed, no. I totally disagree with number eight.
All right. Well, number seven, again, is a no-brainer, Annie Duke. Now, of course, you know, she's dating a guy whose job is to get her on TV as much as possible. So, I mean, she wasn't even in the conversation, I don't think. I mean, obviously, she's on TV quite a bit. Now, whether it's overexposed, I don't know. I mean, a lot of people say that her being on The Apprentice was very good for poker.
Yeah, and here's the other thing, Scott. She hasn't even played a real event, like, in years. I mean, she always does these charity things, which are on TV, you know, or whatever, and she admits it in our latest issue. I wrote a real long story about her on this issue coming out. And by the way, she did win the Heads Up Championship this year, you know, or whatever. Of course she hasn't cashed in the World Series this year, but that doesn't mean anything. I mean, it just makes no sense, this argument. This is the guy who came up with an idea, then after he did his research said, well, I'm on deadline, I got to write something.
Number six is certainly a guy who has embraced his persona. Tony G.
Yeah. Yeah. He's hilarious. And, you know, he's on the big game a lot.
Right.
And he loves to – if you put him and Phil Helmuth on TV – you're just going to be glued to the television because he's just hilarious. Oh, my God. Absolutely hilarious. Now, again, has Tony G won anything outside of, you know, cash games or whatever? Probably not. He doesn't have a bracelet, right? He doesn't have a world...
But he's a lot like Howard Letter in my book. I mean, he's a businessman first who enjoys playing poker.
And plays well.
And he has carved out a persona that works well for him. So, you know, I don't think he regrets what he's doing. And, yeah, if you want to say, hey, you have to have 97 bracelets on your wrist to be on TV, great. But I guarantee you there's going to be like one TV show a month.
Exactly.
That's your bar. I mean, Tony G makes TV poker more watchable. So.
No, absolutely. And, you know, again, it gets back to the whole entertainment thing. Sure, does his poker accolades make him someone who should get a lot of attention? No, but does his... poker antics? Absolutely. I mean, I'll never forget the international series that was on CBS that time. You know, him and Ralph, that was just incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Well, you know, here's the thing, Chris. I'm sure Aaron is ready to kill us because we're just picking him apart here, but I'm going to give him a pass on the next two, I think. I'll be interested to see what you say. Now, number five, Phil Gordon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, this is a guy that, to be honest, I really never understood how he ever got on TV. All right, he had that one cash at the Bay 101, which I believe he's mentioned here, 2004. He got in there because he sold his internet company for like $90 gajillion. So it's not like it was a hardship for him to enter. And I really don't see him doing much else as a poker player. I mean, obviously he's everywhere. And I love the guy. He's fun to watch as a commentator. Obviously, he's very charitable, which is great. But obviously he's a better poker player than me. But certainly probably the worst player on this list, I would think, right?
Yeah, I think if there's going to be someone on this list that he listed, I agree with it. Phil Gordon's probably one of them, but you have to remember he did win the Bay 101.
That is true.
It wasn't just a cash, and he has been runner-up.
Somebody wins it every year.
No, I know. No, you're absolutely right. That's perfect argument. And the other thing, though, is that he interviewed for the commentator job at Celebrity Poker Showdown, got it, so everyone remembers him watching that show, so they can relate to seeing this guy actually playing now. So the general fan might want to see him, and so from that standpoint, yes. From the, hey, I can afford to play in these things because I've sold my .com and I have a share of Full Tilt Poker. Yeah, I don't think this guy deserves to be on TV as much as we see him. Although, again, overexposed.
Yeah, that's true. He hasn't been on a lot lately.
He's on the made-for-TV things, and they're made for TV. That's what they're there for. Right, if you're looking at the actual poker tournaments that are live, you never see him on TV. Right. So, really, he's on the made-for-TV things. Otherwise, they're not made for TV. They're made for radio. So, really. But, yeah, I understand why he would – if he is overexposed, he shouldn't be. But I really don't know if he actually is, to be honest. But, whatever.
All right, next on the list, and again, another one I'm going to agree with, number four, Gabe Kaplan.
Absolutely. Get him off. Get him off. He has been on the cash games. He does the high-stakes commentary by himself still, by the way, which is terrible. Whenever he's playing in the field, anywhere, they go to him with the cameras. Get him off. He's never actually won anything. Yeah, we get it. He plays poker. He's played poker before the boom. And, we've heard the story about Super System. He got it for free for a $100 book for free from Doyle Brunson, and it cost him $7 million. We know. We understand. We've heard the stories. Get him off the TV. It's the one guy I totally agree with on this list.
All right, number three is probably a controversial one. Vanessa Russo.
What? Oh, man. Vanessa Russo? Of course she deserves to be on television. Oh, my God. Why? Because she does all of her winning in Europe and online that she doesn't deserve because you can't see her play? I mean, oh, my God. She's the face of Poker Stars. She's a good-looking woman. She is unbelievably smart. She wins. She cashes. What else do you want from these players? Oh, because they're not playing in Bobby's room? Well, does he want?
Yeah, this is why I say it's controversial. I totally agree with you. I think this is BS. But here's the problem, and I'm not trying to make a pity party for the good-looking girls out there. But this is the problem that they face. If you're a good-looking girl, all of a sudden people say, wow, you're only on TV because you're a good-looking girl.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you supposed to do if you're qualified to be on TV? I mean, go out and scar yourself and shave your head?
Cut me, Mick. Cut me. Yeah.
there's quite a few bombshells on TV that are not poker players and not going to be poker players. She is not one of them. All right. She is qualified to be there. It's not her fault that she's also, easy to look at.
It's not like you're televising Anna Kournikova's match. I mean, she's on TV for one reason only, because she ain't winning anything.
That's a great point. I mean, you truck her out on TV when she played tennis because there's a bunch of horny guys out there that don't know the difference between an ace and a deuce. But when they're flipping channels, they're going to sit there and watch tennis.
Yep.
And the ratings are going to go up because you have her on.
And let's face it, too. Vanessa's kind of a friend of ours. We've chatted with her a few times at little events that we've done or covered or whatever. And I mean, really, when she's at the poker table, she does everything she can to not be attractive, too. She puts on a Beastie Boys hat or her big slick poker camp hat. She's got like layers of clothing on. Her hair's down. I mean, she's got sunglasses on. You're not going by her thinking, hey, this is a babe. What I mean? You're thinking, this lady doesn't want anybody to even look at her. So give me a break. I mean, that's like the worst pick on this list.
All right, number two, Phil Locke.
Who, by the way, just won a bracelet at WSOP Europe. is on the cover of one of our rival magazines right now as we speak. But, okay, go ahead. Let's the Unabomber, he's had two World Series Poker Final Tables. Well, now make it three and a bracelet, by the way. And while he says here, while his more famous girlfriend, Jennifer Tilly, has a gold bracelet. Yeah, well, it came in an invitation-only event kind of thing, really. He's still looking for his first. No, he's not, actually. This is kind of old, I guess. But it's somewhat fitting that Locke was invited to the Bad Boys of Poker event in 2003, even before he made a final table on his own. You know, I just don't think this guy's got a good argument. Again, I think Phil Locke is exactly the same as his Fondiari. There's no difference.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what's rooted here is that, you know, he perfected that Unabomber persona back before he had really the poker chops, which I guess is what this guy's getting at.
Yeah.
But since then, he's cultivated that into a character, and, you know, he's a decent player, too. I mean, he went out, he's dating Jennifer Tilly, that helps. He went out and did the 115-hour thing, and, you know, he's done all the shows with Antonio. You know, if he's overexposed, it's because that he's just very media savvy.
And here's the other thing. If these people are overexposed, it's because the poker world is filled with boring people. So when you find somebody who's interesting, that's probably why he's on TV. Because who are you going to put on there? You know? And the other thing, too, I want to put this in everyone's mind. If you ever look at Phil Locke and he actually takes off the sunglasses and puts on his normal glasses, I want you to think Doonesbury. Okay, this guy looks just like the cartoon characters on Doonesbury. It came to me the other day, you know, separated at birth kind of thing. But all right, number one, Scott, Spirit Rock, Prahlad Friedman. And again, here's the thing. I don't know if Prahlad Friedman is overexposed. I mean, you see him on the World Series because of that rap thing, and then he got called out twice because two things had happened to him. That if nothing had happened to him negatively at the tables, he wouldn't even have been on television.
Yeah, I mean, that was my big complaint with this one. I mean, the couple things that he mentions here were actually real poker issues.
I know.
That were worth seeing regardless of who it was. He just happened to be in the middle of two of them. You know, the not posting the ante and then, you know, then the clock countdown this year.
Yeah.
Those are things. That's what I want to see in a poker show. At this point, I'm bored with the actual, raise and take with Ace King.
Right.
But I want to see some of the issues that we all run into at the poker table or tournaments and see how it's resolved. Now, it's not our fault that both of these happen to involve him.
I know. And overexposed, it's still just two episodes right there. Yeah, one episode with the, you know what I mean? They refer to it and stuff or whatever, but really, who would not want to see Jeffrey Lissandro threaten this guy's life on national TV? It was the greatest moment ever. I mean, they were both wrong. You know, they both took it too far, but to say he's overexposed and to be number one on the list?
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, Scott, he happened to win a World Poker Tour event. Just last year, but you know, whatever. You know, whatever. He's not deserving of his accolades or anything. You know, and then he calls him a bunch of names here. I'm not going to call him and say what he says. Yeah. But really, to give him top billing on this list when he's been on TV three times, give me a break. Unbelievable. This list was horrid. I'm so glad you brought it on the show.
It got me so steamed that I can't even think of people that really should be on there.
Who are overexposed.
Because, you know, we knocked the legs out of his argument at the very beginning that by nature players on TV are all overexposed.
All right, Dan Negreanu, how's that?
That's probably a good one.
He's on way too much, and if Poker Stars didn't have an issue with Poker After Dark, he'd be on there every week too. And, you know, I love Dan Negreanu. He's a great player and everything, but really he needs to just stop talking. I mean, if you ever watch him, I mean, he just talks and talks and talks, and you're like, dude, just call or fold, you know? And I wonder how aggravating it gets for them. You know, I wonder if they're going to call the floor over and say, hey, is this really worth it? You know, this guy's aggravating everybody, and you're losing rake, you know?
He's raising without looking at his card. Yeah. Can't we get rid of him? No, we can't do that. That would be bad for business.
Ah, man, I lobbed it up there, and you hit it out of the park.
But, you know, I guess to your point, I mean, he is a guy that's on every single TV show. I don't know of anybody else that is on as many shows as he is.
Right. And, I mean, I know
the epitome of, quote-unquote, overexposed.
Sure, because the Poker Stars Million Dollar Challenge features him. He's the star of the show. Then you got the Poker Stars Big Show, and he's on every other week because he's the Poker Stars face. You know, if Vanessa's the female face, he's the male face of the show. And, of course, whenever he's in the World Series, he's at the feature table. you know, and when there's commercials for PokerStars, he's in every single PokerStars commercial. And like I said, until they changed their views on Poker After Dark, he was on there every week, too, almost. So if somebody's overexposed, and really, I mean, he won a bracelet a couple years ago, but and he plays in the biggest game, so his accolades, I guess, deserve to be on. But as far as being on TV too much, yeah, I would think Dan Negreanu is right up there with the top.
You know what? I'm actually surprised, though, somebody that didn't make the list, and I'm not saying he should. But what about Phil Hellmuth?
Yeah, Phil Hellmuth. See, he does win, though. I mean, he won his 11th bracelet, what, a year and
again,
a half ago?
Again, you're right. All right. Admittedly, I think that's what Aaron's point is. You know, if you're good, then you're good enough to be on TV.
Yeah.
In Aaron's world. But, you know, how much of Phil's TV time is him winning?
Yeah.
And how much of it is him
whining,
knocking chairs over, screaming at people, being carried into tournaments like Roman gods? His TV, I mean, you have to go back probably 3 or 4 years at least, back when I used to watch TV, to find actually a show where he's actually playing poker.
Yep. Yeah, he's only won a World Series bracelet over the last 5 years or whatever, and he's never won a World Poker Tour event, and he's the one guy who's on all the shows because Ultimate Bet isn't offended by anyone or isn't, you know, whatever. So he's on Poker After Dark. He's on the big game. You know, he's on the World Series and all those other things, high stakes. So, yeah, I think he should be on the list regardless of his poker prowess. I mean, really, if you're looking at the list, half these guys all have poker game. You know what I mean? So they all deserve to be on TV for their games. Just because they haven't won lately doesn't mean that. Another thing, too, is people always – that's the problem with people like this who don't really – care that much about poker, that it's their job to write about it or whatever. I mean, they know that these guys are making a living somehow, and if they're not cashing in tournaments, then hey, they're probably playing cash games and making a ton of money. So they're real playing poker on the side that you can't see. So, I mean, it's just a poor thought out article from beginning to end. Sorry, Aaron Todd.
This is Daniel Negreanu of FullContactPoker.com. You're listening to Ante Up.
This week's hand comes from Keith, and let me see if he gave us a city. Did he give us a city? Come on, Keith. Where are you from? Where are you from, Keith? No. Keith from any town, USA. Or I guess any town, new world. It could be from another one.
Yeah,
it looks like he has a U.S. number, though. He gave us a phone number.
All right,
so Keith from any town, USA. So he says he's been listening to us for about a year now and must say that the podcast is one of the most entertaining ones out there.
Yes, I have to say I agree.
Shucks.
And we are not overexposed.
No, of course not. The unorganized banter between you two seems to be always perfectly timed. Unorganized?
That's all we do is organize it.
It's completely organized. We just ignore it.
Oh, man.
It's like 5 o'clock shadow. It's there for a purpose, even though it looks raggedy, right?
I think it looks sexy.
Okay, moving on. All right, so this is a tournament hand, regrettably not on an online site affiliated with Ante Up. It says it's middle late in the tournament.
Okay.
All right, so I guess it's on the other end of the middle, right?
So, yeah, they're getting close to the bubble is what he's saying, I think.
195 players were entered. It's a 6 max $3 tournament. Squiggly 60 left. So there we go. That's okay. Better than saying middle late. He actually gave us the actual numbers, right?
Yeah, actual numbers.
Top 24 get paid. All right?
Yeah.
Let's see. We have just shy of 10 grand in chips. And around the table, we have somebody with 7 grand, somebody with 10 grand, somebody with 3 grand, and somebody with about 13 and a half grand.
And you said we have almost 10?
A little bit less than 10. So are in second to last place, but we're right there in the middle.
Okay.
Or third to last. We're in the middle. Dash in the middle.
We're squiggly line middle.
Squiggly line middle. All right. So let's see. Our blinds are 120, 240 with a quarter ante.
Okay.
And we have two folds, a limper, the small blind calls, and we look down at 10 of spades, 3 of clubs.
All in. Okay, clearly we don't need to spend any more time on this. We check.
All right, good. Absolutely. All right, so moving on. On the flop comes 5 of diamonds, 3 of spades, 10 of clubs, top and bottom pair, and the small blind bets 340 into us.
Very interesting. Here's the deal, Scott. Now, so a couple of things you don't want to do is you don't want to go broke in an unraised pot. I think you even talked about that earlier on the show.
Yeah.
So you don't want to just milk this. You probably want to end it right away. The other thing is, you know, two pair, top and bottom, that's really good. But, you know, I think that you probably want to thin the field here. So I have no problem raising this to probably 1,200. Just because, and I know it's about a tenth of our stack, which is fine to me. I don't think that's committing me yet. If something significant happens, I can get away from it still. But I have no problem raising here. I can't just call. And I need to call. I need to raise enough to thin the field and get the guy who bet out to really think about it and have to put some money in.
Right, right. Now, the small blind is the designated villain in this hand.
Okay.
And he gave us a little stats here. Over 75 hands, his VPIP is 36%. Pre-flop raises about 8% of the time. C-bets 100% of the time. Very interesting.
There you go. That's another interesting stat right there.
And 3-bets 7%. So he's not going to 3-bet often, right?
Yeah, so he's not going to re-raise us probably if we raise it here. And
all the more reason to raise, right?
Plus we can't give his C-betting any validity.
Yeah.
Although he only raises preflop, what'd you say, 8%? So.
No, he was a small blind, so he just called. So.
No. It's stats.
I know what you mean. I got you.
So if he only raises preflop, so he only c-bets 8 times out of 100. So.
Right.
It's really not. It's kind of a deceiving stat, but I love the VPIP. Voluntary puts money into pot. which has no bearing on this anyway. Essentially, I mean, I know he's a small blind, but.
I'm still going to raise. 8%. Actually, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. So I'm going to raise.
I mean, he's like a super tight player, I guess, is what I would draw from these figures, right?
That's 8 out of 100 hands.
Only raises less than 10%, but always continuation bets. So obviously he's only playing premium cards that he can c-bet with confidently.
Yeah. Which tells us something about his starting hand now, because he would have raised with it had he had a hand that was worth c-betting.
Exactly. And he's going to 3-bet just about the same amount he's going to raise. So those are all the same hands. So he's got a hand. He is going to play it aggressively to the end.
Well, here's what I want to find out, Scott. I want to find out if this guy has a hand. So I'm going to raise, and I know that somewhere Lee Childs is cringing because he's saying that, you know, finding information is just, I don't know, he always argues with me with that. But I'm going to raise. I'm going to raise 1,200. If this guy calls or if he re-raises me, I'm out of there. I don't think 10-3 is good enough.
I'm not sure about the call, but the raise definitely.
Yeah, okay, definitely.
Maybe the call, but definitely the raise.
Okay, because there's no flush draw, obviously, so you have to worry about – he's in the blind, so you have to worry about it, either a small set, 10-5, or 2-4 open-ended draw kind of thing. Maybe a set of threes, but, you know, that's very, very hard to do. So, but you have to worry about a set here. You have to worry about a set, and you have to worry about a bigger two-pair, 10s and 5s.
Right. Okay. We raised to 775.
See, now right there, I'm not happy. Because that's not enough.
It needs to be more, right?
It needs to be more. Because even if this guy probably isn't on a draw, but you're not going to get any information when this guy only has to call. But if he re-raises you, you know you could probably get away from it.
All right. Well, our hero says he's been playing aggressive from the blinds when hitting pairs or big draws. So this bet succeeds in getting the third player out. Our villain thinks about it and raises to 1,500.
Oh. God, that's sad. We got to be beat here, right? How could he bet into a pretty decent amount of people from the blinds with that board? I mean, unless he has, I mean, ace 10, is he going to really do that with ace 10 or jack 10? You know?
Again, this would be a completely different hand if we didn't have these stats. And you can't be a slave to the stats, I know.
Yeah.
But he would be really playing away from his stats to have anything that's not beating us.
Yeah. Those stats tell me that we're behind now. I just can't imagine the hand. Pocket fives? I mean, pocket threes are unlikely because you have a 10 and a 3. So pocket tens obviously are unlikely. Would he really do this with ace 10 or jack 10 knowing you were in the big blind and could have two pair easily here? So he's got to have 10-5, but would he have come into the pot with a 10-5?
Right.
But he might have limped with pocket fives. Right, because so he could have a set of fives, and again, he could have the rare set of threes or tens, but if he had tens, I think he would have raised preflop. So, really, this guy's got 10-5 or 5-5, to me, because he's not going to raise on a draw here, right? He's not raising with 4-6 or 4-deuce, right?
No.
I mean, unless you could have the same hand as us, but there's no way this guy came into the pot voluntarily, considering how tight he is with 10-3. I don't know. It feels like pocket fives to me. And because it's a hand of the week, I would throw it away. If I'm playing at the table, I got two pair, including the top pair, I'm probably calling here and seeing what the turn is. So let's just call. I just have a really bad feeling about this one.
Yeah, because I don't know what I'm looking for, to be honest. The other thing,
maybe
too.
Maybe a 10 to make me happy, or a 3. 3 would make me happy, because if he has 10s and 5s, I have a full house over his two pair. So right. Come on, 3.
All right, well, our hero says the min raise is scary, but he doesn't think he can get away from it. Makes the call, and the turn is the 4 of spades. So our board now is the 5 of diamonds, tray of spades, 10 of clubs, 4 of spades.
That didn't do anything. Right, that card didn't do anything. There's no way this guy was doing that with ace, deuce, or deuce six. So, and he didn't re-raise with pocket fours to get 3-4s. So again, we'll see what he does. If he bets a ton, I'm probably gonna let it go, because now we've bet 1,500. We only had a little less than 10, so we're down to 75-ish. You know, if this guy bets like $2,000 or $3,000, you know, that's almost 50% of your stack. I don't know. It's just pretty scary. What's he do?
Well, he bets just shy of a ton, 1,800.
Oh, man.
Like that little mathematic.
Oh, man.
Tons, 2,000 point. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, too, I was... God, if I'm at the table, I'm calling. I really am. It's just that the hand of the week influences my decision-making, because I know that he probably lost his hand. All right, I guess I'm calling. I mean, I would consider...
Oh, my gosh. Are you serious?
I don't know. I would consider raising if I really thought this guy had, like, 5-3 or something, you know? But
it's really tough for us to represent any hand that 4 helped at this point.
Yeah.
So unless we're trying to set our story out that we had the better hand on the flop... We can't even sell that story anymore, because we raised, got re-raised, and didn't re-raise.
Yeah.
So we lost that storyline. We certainly can't do the 4 helping storyline. I mean, of course, this is online. You don't have that much time to think, but I'm having trouble believing that we're able to convince our opponent that we've got anything that could beat him.
Oh, my God. This is brutal. It just feels like this guy has a set of fives, you know. And then if he did, I wouldn't want the 3, because I would have.
Yep.
Oh, man. Oh, God. All right, let's fold.
All right, good. We're in agreement now.
Let's fold. I mean, we're going to get lambasted for folding here, I think. I really think we are. I think this guy could think he has, you know, pocket sevens and his hand's good or something, you know, and it didn't raise with him preflop, because it's not really a premium hand, and we're going to get lambasted for this one. I just know it, but I guess I'll fold here.
You know, I think the pocket sevens is a stretch, too, so I wouldn't worry about that, buddy. I mean...
Could be sixes, and then he's got an open and straight draw to go with it now, and that's why he's so confident.
To three bet with a that's not the best pair.
Sixes really don't make sense.
Yeah, with the stats. I mean, even without the stats, that's asking a lot.
All right.
Well, our hero does make the call. The river card is the tray of hearts.
Oh, no.
5 of diamonds, tray of spades, 10 of clubs, 4 of spades, tray of hearts. We boat up.
Oh, no.
Opponent bets 2,000 into us.
All right, let me do the math here. 38 and then 48, 53. We started with 10, so we got about 4,000 and a half. We'll still have 20 big blinds if we call. And we have a full house. So if you put them on pocket fives, you know, I just can't fold a full house. I'm sorry. In a $3 tournament, I know we're pretty close to the bubble, but I just can't fold a full house. But since I might put them on pocket fives, I can afford 2,000. I'm not going to raise. So in his shoes, I didn't fold the turn, so now I have to call the river. It has to be. It's either pocket fives or something really wacky, like, you know, like kings. And he was just, you know, he was slow playing it and whatever, you know. I mean, I just... And now he's got kings and threes. You know, he thinks his hand's good in case somebody had 5-3 or something. So or 5-4. So I don't know. I have to call now based on what he did. Oh, man, it's going to be sick.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I mean, you're not supposed to compound mistakes in poker. I get that.
Right, right.
But if you made the call on the turn, this is one of the cards that you were hoping would come.
Right.
And you got it, so, you know, at the very least you have to call. And I'm certainly not advocating raising, but I wouldn't have made the call on the turn either, so kind of weird.
Yeah.
But if you made that call on the turn, I think you got to at least make the call on the river when you hit.
Yeah, so, no, absolutely. I mean, a better card obviously would have been a 10, but you have a full house. I mean, you put them on pocket fives, but we're not all Danny Negreanu. So, you know, we can't always put these guys on perfect hands, especially in the $3 tournament. He could have anything. So I have to call here and just say, all right, you know what, if I'm wrong, I still have 20 big blinds or whatever and can double up in the next hand and get right back to where I was anyway. So I'm calling.
All right, well, our hero says at this point, it has to be pocket fives, Chris.
See, it has to be.
He says, I still think I made the right call, and then puts the $2,000 in the pot.
Oh, man. Well, even he knows it's pocket fives, so this is going to be a little letdown, I think, when you say it's pocket fives, right?
All right. Well, our villain turns over five of clubs, five of spades.
This is so sick.
So sick.
He runs so bad.
FML.
FML, man. Just don't worry about it. You got 20 blinds to degen it up. Oh, that is sad. It just screamed. That's what he had. It screamed it from the beginning.
Again with those stats, wow. You know, that's a person that only plays cards that he thinks are good. And this kind of betting line, you know, unless you just want to be crazy and think he's straying.
I have to admit, too, that, you know, I don't take $3 tournaments seriously when I'm playing them.
Of course not.
You know, I'm having fun, and you don't have enough time to put that much thought into these hands like you and I do now, sure, because we have, you know, unlimited time on the internet. Whereas when you're playing poker on the internet, you have 15 seconds and you have to hit the button. And to really put him on that hand, you know, hand of the week, you know, we're sort of slanted already toward this is probably going to be a losing hand, so let's come up with the worst possible scenario. But when you're playing live and you got a full house and you got two pair, you're probably going pretty aggressive with it. So I don't really fault him for making the call. I don't fault him for where I think he made the mistake was probably the raise. I think if he had made it early on, if he had made it like 12 or 1300, like I had said, and then the guy re-raises to $3,000 or whatever, he might be able to get away from it at that point. You know, or you could get it all in there and then, you know, watch as you need to hit runner and lose right away. But at least you wouldn't have been put through the pain of going through street by street.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow.
But, you know, it's a good hand. That's a tough hand to lose to.
All right, Keith. Well, you lost a $3 tournament, but you do get a free download of Poker Hand Breakdown Pro worth well more than $3, by the way. It is a great hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from Element26.net. And you know, if you got a hand out there, send it to us at podcast@andyupmagazine.com.
You know, I'd like to thank Aaron Todd for coming up with that terrible list for us to talk about today. and for anybody else that we might have had fun with at their expense. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Logg.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.